Hello there, this is Jonathan Ross, and welcome to another edition of the podcast, I Like Films. Now, when I started doing this podcast, one of the main reasons why I thought it might be fun was because I genuinely get a thrill out of meeting filmmakers whose work inspires and entertains me. And top of my list, probably, was the guy I get to spend some time with today, Jordan Peele. Now, I was already a fan of his comedy work as part of Key and Peele that I'd seen. It's on American TV, and I think I've been watching it on YouTube or somewhere. But his first movie, well, that just came out of left field and blew us all away. Get Out was an amazing film. Now one of my favourite horror films of all time, although I think it's diminishing it somewhat, even calling it a horror film, because it's so much more than that. Beautifully performed, but brilliantly written by Jordan. Brilliantly, amazingly directed. Just a truly memorable movie, which I think will stand the test of time, as indeed will his new film, Us. The excitement that I felt going to see this, and my whole family, we went as a family, so that's how we celebrate our family bonds, going to see Jordan Peele movies. We rushed to see it, and it was not just a great experience, but rather like Get Out, it's a movie which I know will repay repeated viewings. So here we are, I'm chatting with Mr. Jordan Peele. Jordan, congratulations on Us. Amazing. I absolutely adored it.
Thank you. Thank you.
What a great film. And you know, it's by far and away not the norm that someone's second film, after such a stunning debut, you know, has the same sort of level of impact and people enjoy it as much. So there must have been, I would have thought, some fear when you set out to make your second movie?
Yeah, just whew. Phew, that's good. Some fear, but you know what? You return to this idea that if you make, you know, I have the opportunity to make my favorite film that doesn't exist. So just do that, and if you do it right, if you do justice to that, hopefully people will like it. And if not, then you'll have time to go crawl up into a hole and
was there
fetal
was
position.
I guess there was a chance when you set out to make Get Out that might have been it. You know, that might not have been a hit. And of course, so I guess you put the same kind of level of personal involvement into that you put into Us.
I have a lot of images and nightmares running around in my brain, so I feel like I'll be able to come up with something to at least have fun with. But that really is it, Jonathan. It's if I'm having fun creating it, then it is its own reward, first of all. And the audience tends to find that fun. As you know, that's kind of how comedy works. You know, if I'm not over making it over analytical and I'm truly having fun and making myself laugh, then others will kind of get it.
But I guess people do impose that level of, not necessarily over-analysis, but there is analysis that goes into your movies. Because Us, like Get Out, there are metaphors involved. There is a kind of a subtext there, if you choose to poke and prod and wake it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And for me, the sort of social layers that both these movies have in very different ways comes about by exploring something much more primal that comes from looking at my dreams and my ideas and ask myself why. Why is that? What relevance does that have? Why is that coming out of me? And so there's a little bit of this conversation with yourself, you know, ironically, that kind of creates these films for me.
And so the imageries or the kind of moments of nightmarish thoughts, ideas, visions that came to you to lead you towards Us, without wanting to give anything away, would that have been the idea of doppelgangers themselves itself, you know, that as a concept, or was the kind of like societal points that you're making, were they the kind of ideas that rose to the front?
The nugget, as I call it, for this film was the doppelganger one. I used to picture seeing myself on the opposite side of the subway platform.
What a terrifying sight that would be, Jordan.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I've put good thought into what it is, but I didn't know, is it you know, the fact that if you see yourself, you intrinsically know one of you must go. You know, there's only room for one. That's the nature of the world you've been taught. And if that doppelganger gives you a little creepy smile, what do they know that I don't know? So I think the thing that catapulted me into making this movie and allowed me to understand that there was a doppelganger story I hadn't seen was this idea of the collective doppelganger. What if you came across a family of doppelgangers? Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be interesting and horrifying for a whole new bunch of contexts? And that brought me towards the collective.
I want to go on about the nugget that might have inspired Get Out, but of course, what a joy for the actors to get the chance to play themselves as themselves, yeah, but then also as the kind of slightly more knowing doppelganger version.
Mm-hmm. I, you know, my favorite horror movies, you know, movies like The Shining and Misery and Silence of the Lambs, you know, the thing that is scary is embedded in performance. And so that is something that, you know, I've enjoyed in my first two films, and I hope to continue, is this idea that, you know, let the acting be scary. You know, I come to a movie to see acting and to watch that craft. Everything is in support. Look, if you've got a can I curse here?
Yeah, please
do. If you have a shitty looking film but the acting is amazing, you've got a good film.
Yeah.
And if you have the opposite, if you've got an amazing looking film but with crappy performances, it doesn't work.
But surely the key to all this, though, is that both of those things will fall if the script isn't any good.
Yes. The script has to be good. I mean, that was the Hitchcock proverb or whatever is three things you need to make a good movie: script, script, script.
Yeah.
And it is true. If the blueprint is there, then, you know, that's the height that you can push.
It stands a chance, at least.
Stands a chance.
Performance-wise, though, I don't think I've ever seen Lupita deliver such a remarkable performance. I mean, really, truly, and I know people are already talking as they do and speculating in a slightly irritating way about awards, which are all a long way off, but just a tremendous performance from her.
It is. It is. She, you know, first of all, had a task that you don't come across very often, as you're noting it in these two roles. And two roles with, you know, the three-dimensional roles. You know, I would joke with her. I was like, I need you to be the Carice Starling and the Hannibal Lecter in this movie, you know, which you know, to sort of, you know, jokingly put the pressure on. But she delivered, and she went to, you know, such depth in how she thought about these roles, their connection between the two of them, but also the different worlds that they're from. And it was when she came on set as Red, the villain, I mean, you could feel the air get sucked out of the room.
Yeah.
It was like we were in the presence of evil.
Well, and all four of the doppelganger family play both roles brilliantly. I thought the young girl, she was truly chilling. But Winston, who kind of like, in a way, it's slightly tougher because, of course, if we can use the term, you know, the real Winston,
yeah,
is so broadly comic in a way and wonderfully comic. But then he has to be kind of guttural and animalistic in his doppelganger form. So more of a contrast there.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Abraham, the quote unquote shadow version of Gabe, Winston's other character. You know, we've sort of exploring the Michael Myers archetype. There's almost a childlike curiosity to that, the type of psychopath he is. and he brought great empathy to the character. You know, he didn't pass judgment on either of his characters. He didn't go think of Abraham as the evil one or anything like that. He did the work to connect to both of them.
Which is crucial for us to, when you get to the end of the movie, for the kind of reveals and the fun there. You know, obviously you're writing the script, but the kind of foreshadowing that occurs, both in this and Get Out early on, there are little key moments that repay revisiting these films. You look at them again, and that's why I'm very keen to see us again. But I wonder, is that something that occurs to you? Is that in the early stages of writing, you're thinking, I'll put a little marker here which will make more sense when they are aware of this? Or is it something that you kind of like plant back in when you've got to the end?
Well, you know, there's all sorts of levels you can sort of promote this rewatchability, you know, to sort of take you behind the curtain a little bit. One is just on the level of the Easter egg of realizing there's little bits in here, if you're paying attention, that you can pick up. Another device I use is sort of episodic quality. And this is kind of a little bit more of the esoteric secret of mine is, you know, movies that have a feeling like that they have a certain motion and that you enter new phases of the movie, both visually and thematically and plot-wise, you know, allow you to just promote rewatchability. I always rewatch films that have clear sections to them, and yeah, you almost
so not just in the kind of classic three acts, more like actually kind of tonal shifts, like
yes,
you're watching a TV series.
Yes, and I work with a four act structure generally is how I think about it. But yes, a new location in my sort of past the midpoint will you know, make sort of fulfill the adventure and the journey. You know, the Star Wars movies does this in a great way. You're visiting different three worlds, or four different planets, and the rewatchability is immense.
Speaking of Star Wars, are you tempted by science fiction? Because at the moment now we think of you, and it seems, I mean, I think people are always strange when someone from comedy goes into something which is dark. They assume comedy will lead to comedy. And of course there is comedy in your films, but I think there was some surprise when people said, oh, this guy, you know, Key and Peele, and he's doing this grim kind of like a dystopian social horror movie. I suppose that, but are you tempted to, do you want to stay now that you are, I guess you have a kind of brand name in a way, so that's exploitable, or do you want to expand into the other kind of genres which you loved as a child?
No, I'm pretty firmly in this horror or horror adjacent style. Now, my favorite horror movie may be Alien, and you know, as you'll note with these films, there's they hit a science fiction note as well. A piece of that. I love where science fiction and horror can interact, because there's something special that happens when you try to apply science to, you know, whatever you want to call it, magic, or the soul, or religion. The two ideas are incompatible in a very monstrous way.
Mankind tampering, where they shouldn't be. Man and womankind.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That there's a, you know, it's one of these great all-time dances between science and religion, and where you can usually in the horror setting, where they intersect is an abomination.
Yeah.
And that is cool.
You mentioned the nugget that the doppelganger idea that came to you. What was the nugget for Get Out, if there was one?
The nugget for Get Out was, you know, I had this dream once. I was going through a bank, lobby of a bank, and I was passing through a bustling group of people. I turned the corner to the elevator area, and all of the walla of the people went silent at once. And I sort of creeped around and looked back at the lobby I just walked through, and all the people were standing there looking at me. And this immense feeling, you know, what I call it, the stomach just dropping out of my ass, you know, this primal feeling, and that started me off on this, you know, understanding that the fear that I was going to exploit in this movie would be the fear of unwanted attention. It's fairly universal, even for us who tend to get in front of the camera and all that.
Seek it out for whatever, deep psychological flaws that compel us to do
right.
this. Yeah. That amazing film, of course. I was talking to Daniel Kaluuya a little bit briefly, and I went to a screening here in the UK, and it was a screening that had been set up for him, for his friends. And even though I'm not really a friend of his, I'd like to be, but I don't think I know him that well, he let us go along to it. And it was interesting seeing it with an audience, predominantly people of colour. Very different reaction, I think, than I would have got from a white audience in the UK, just in terms of some of the beats, some of the jokes, some of the ideas that were picked up there. And I understand that you were initially wary of casting Daniel because the experience of being a black man in the UK, you feared, might be quite a very different one to being a black guy in the US. Could you expand on that for me?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Daniel Kaluuya is probably my favorite actor in existence. I found him through the Black Mirror episode that he just absolutely...
It was 30 million
merits. 30 million merits.
Amazing. Was, an amazing performance from him as well.
Incredible. So I knew he had needed in terms of being able to commit to both sides of this journey, both the restraint and then the passionate thing. But yeah, I also didn't know how much of what I was exploring was the African-American experience.
Yeah.
And in my early conversations with him, he said, that's it.
You know, I mean, because obviously it works brilliantly, but I was speaking to, there was a young woman I was sitting next to at the screening afterwards, and I raised this point, and then I asked her opinion, and she said, I think it is different. It is different being a black in the UK, she said, to being a black woman in America. That was her interpretation.
Yeah, which is, you know, totally fascinating to me, and I believe it. I would imagine that there is a core commonality in the sense of being the other or the minority, but of course, you know what I can speak intelligently to an extent about the states. You know, this, the history of the states that is slavery, the evolution of the civil rights movement. It's a loaded, loaded, loaded history. And so, you know, I'm sure you'll notice from outside, at least the dynamic right now is we're victims of the generational trauma and so many of the, you know, atrocious forms of racism that used to exist, still exist, but in different ways and with a different mask on. So there's a little bit of a scar tissue in terms of race that, you know, I don't know if we'll ever get past.
I mean, it's interesting because to an extent, you can see, even in us, you can interpret the metaphor to an extent to be, I mean, it's kind of about oppressed people or people who have fewer breaks in life. It's kind of, and you could see that as a kind of race metaphor as well, of course. But I guess it would be wrong, and it would be something I imagine that you would like to avoid, to be categorized as the black horror film director, mm-hmm. or to be someone whose films always speak about that subject, even if one has to dig to find it.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind being called the black horror director. It's true, damn it. But I did want to make this movie not about race because I didn't want to be pigeonholed as I only make horror films about one thing. I really said a lot of what I needed to say about race with Get Out. So this one is you know, it's about the United States. It's about However you define us, the word us, I think it can apply to any number of factions that, you know, you just need to have, there just needs to be a them. And that's what we're talking about, is that intrinsically in the familial and the tribalism of humanity is a sense of the other and the invader.
And I guess, in a way, and I know you said before the screening of the movie last night, it's sort of a Rorschach test in that, you know, how you interpret it. Because I came out feeling I was one of the shadows. And I was proud of that. And I was telling my family, you guys don't know how lucky you've had it.
Because
I come from I come from that sewer.
Yes.
I remember that rabbit.
Yes.
So now a word from our sponsors, and it's 23andMe. They are offering you a health and ancestry DNA kit in which you do a small test at home, send it off to them, and they will send you a report on your health, your traits, your ancestry, and more. For example, you may well have a genetic variant that is common among elite power athletes. I'm pretty certain I don't have that. You might be lucky enough to have that, because studies have found that almost all elite power athletes, including sprinters, throwers, and jumpers, have a specific genetic variant in a gene related to muscle composition. If you'd like to find out whether you possibly have that, do the 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit, send it in. When you get your reports back, you can lord it over your friends, saying that within you lies the potential to be a super athlete, even if you probably choose not to exercise enough to fully realize that potential. That's down to you. That's nothing to do with me or them, but we're offering you that chance. So buy your 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit today. Go to 23andMe.com/films. That's 23andMe.com/films. My wife and I did it. We had quite a lot of fun because to do the test, you produce a lot of phlegm, I suppose is the word, from your mouth, and you put it into a test tube. So we sat around a table coughing up into test tubes, which kind of became a weirdly perverse kind of competition as to who could get the most in the quickest. I think I probably came last. You can buy your 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit today. Go to 23andMe.com/film. So that's the number 2, the number 3, the words andme.com/films. You'll get £25 off your health and ancestry service kit through to the 1st of April. Thank us later.
I wanted to make a monster movie. And the great monster movies, you know, are an exploration of fear, but also with an empathy. You know, there's often, you know, Frankenstein, you know, you look at the classic Universal monsters.
Well, even you mentioned even Michael Myers, there's a kind of moment where you feel some empathy, some...
Yes.
You feel, you know.
Yeah, well, okay, then, yeah, you jump to the 80s as well, as, you know, when you got even, you know, I mean, there's no empathy for Freddy Krueger. There is a... You know, we began to relate to Freddy Krueger more than the victims at a certain point.
Well, we enjoy who's... But then that's because he's killing Johnny Depp, and who doesn't want to see that happen?
And he's doing little jokes about it.
You know, exactly. He was the character we love. You mentioned we're talking about Daniel in 30 Million Merits. And of course, Black Mirror springs to mind. It's an amazing piece of anthology fiction with similar themes to that you explore, perhaps. And now you're in charge of Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Which is so exciting. Although I went to look back at some Twilight Zone advances because I remember loving it as a kid. Most of them were terrible. I mean, most of them are pretty bad.
I cannot confidently back up your assertion as someone who is in charge of continuing the great tradition of Serling.
Understood.
But I can say that the ones that we think about are the really great ones.
There's five, maybe. And even then, when you look at them, you look at like Nightmare at 20,000 Feet or something. Yeah. That suit, that wouldn't get you through the door these days.
I disagree.
Wow.
I disagree. Wow. I mean, come on. It's there is a primal tension and suspense and a relatable. I mean, it is exploiting our fear of flight. We all have that.
Jordan, feet. You see the man's rubber soles as he's leaning on the side.
Okay, look,
the
production value. You have to put yourself back in the time and all that. Yes,
A great teleplay. So yeah. It was Matheson, wasn't it? Was that one of Richard Matheson's?
I'm not sure, but let's say yes.
I think it might.
You know, a part of what has become the legacy of that is there's a kitsch value in retrospect.
Yeah.
And there always was this sort of Serling wink that is, unique from the Charlie Brooker's wink, which is...
Well, Charlie's has been perhaps unfairly categorized as a far darker soul than Serling had a levity, didn't he, of course?
Yes, and I don't know that that's true. I find that there's a levity with Charlie's work. And by the way, I think it's one of the greatest shows of all time. In Black Mirror, but yes, there was a the project of the Twilight Zone was sometimes it would be based on the thing would amount to a dad pun, to serve man. There is a fun and a whimsy that is in Twilight Zone where. Black Mirror, there's a satire and a gut punch, right? They get compared often for obvious reasons, science fiction anthology. I think with Twilight Zone, one way we're helping define what makes a Twilight Zone is we're sort of leaving the technological exploration to Charlie's world, which he's nailing.
It's more about humanity than in a way.
It's more about society.
And will you be doing the intros? Will you be standing in a slightly uncomfortably shot way like Serling always was, cigarette in hand, ideally, and doing the kind of like spiel?
Everything but the cigarette. It's
such a shame, though, because you look at it now and it's such a moment. He's got a cigarette in his hand
time. It's such a different time.
Yeah.
I gave up smoking over a decade ago. So I, at the very least, I'm not up there fidgeting, needing one.
So you've written any of the scripts so far? How many are you going to be in charge of? Presumably you have a team working with you.
Yes.
You'll be steering them.
It would be disingenuous to claim I'm serving all of the roles that Serling did with the Twilight Zone. I have a great team of producers with me. I'm working with Simon Kinberg, Wynne Rosenfeld, and Audrey Chon. And we have the episodes have all been written. We have a stable of writers.
How many have you written? How many have you got?
10.
Wow.
10.
So that's the whole first season. 10
so that's
episodes.
That's the first season.
Yeah.
It comes out April 1st.
This year. Man. So you started shooting, I guess.
Oh, we shot this year in about 3 weeks.
You
April 1st.
It? Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
And so I can't wait for this. And this is going to be on CBS in the States.
CBS All Access.
And so over here we can get it online, I guess? Or
You'll have to check your local listing.
I'm very excited about that. I really am. And presumably this was growing up because you would have been... I mean, I was too young to see it first time it went out, really. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't have seen it first time. Was there an equivalent? Amazing Stories, I guess. Spielberg, that was on when you were a kid, I guess, wasn't it?
Yeah, Amazing Stories. That was a great one for me. I mean, I remember the one Spielberg directed with the World War II...
Yeah.
Plane and the cartoon wheels that come at the end. Spoiler alert.
Of course, he directed an episode of Night Gallery.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
For Rod Serling.
No,
yeah, I think it was his first TV direction. And Night Gallery was even worse than Twilight Zone, it has to be said, even though it's kind of great and kind of awful at the same time. And you're right. But that episode directed by Spielberg is the one with Joan Crawford in.
Okay, no, I have no idea. You've out-nerded me.
I've got the box set. I'll send it over because my wife, if I threaten to put Night Gallery on, she threatens to leave me immediately. I made her watch it once. The first one with Roddy McDowall in is hilariously over the top. and ridiculous. Okay. But Night Gallery was great as well. So this is this is an interesting point, the fact that they've given a black American creator authorship of what is a very mainstream show in this way. I think it's a kind of, it seems to me that in a way, this is more of an interesting turning point than other points in your life.
In the genre, you know, I wanted to put a black family at the center of a horror film. I'd never seen that.
Yeah, yeah, huge.
We're in a very encouraging time for black auteurs, for black directors, for black actors. In the industry, you know, like you noted, there's the myth that there is greater risk, you know, both domestically and internationally, yeah, with black films is gone.
In this post-Wakandan age.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. And now that we know Wakanda exists, we
there's
know,
no going back.
I mean, there's no going back. Yeah.
That vibranium will set us free.
Exactly.
The music, I love the score. I was listening to some of the tracks you had. I was familiar with some of the modern tracks you have on it. I'm not sure who wrote the incidental music for us, for you?
The composer is Michael Abels.
So that scene, this is not a spoiler, but there's a scene, there's a shot fairly early, which is an aerial shot from above on the beach. Mm-hmm. And there's a beautiful percussive piece of, yeah, was that by, that's by him?
That's him, yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't that great? And he is he did Get Out for me as well. He's a real master at pinpointing new sounds, new sort of genres of horror music, and that's why.
And what's that track they do in the car, the one Something Five?
Loonies.
Okay, because that has a very clear sound, a very, very clean sound. I don't know if that's a version that you've used for it, but once again it struck me that he's picked out some of the kind of techniques of that almost for his score.
So yes, so we sort of kind of continue with this idea of creating the horror deconstruction of I Got Five on It, which is, you know, it's a Bay Area anthem.
Not about drugs, as it's pointed
out. Not about drugs, don't do drugs. In the scene that you're referencing later in the movie where that comes back, it was originally this Tchaikovsky song, you know, it kind of, as you know, it coordinates with this ballet performance bit.
Yeah.
And I just didn't feel like it was working. And so that song, the I Got Five on It, always has this Angelo Baldamente-esque, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Plastic, slightly off-kilter feel.
Yeah, something wrong about it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's such a dope groove. I got five on it. So we turned that up a notch and sort of...
Well, it's an amazing moment. The impact on the audience is very interesting because everyone who knew the song, you could see, reacted immediately, very viscerally to it.
Yeah.
And everyone else, you know, it took me a second or two to understand kind of what I thought you were trying to do there because
I
hadn't heard that before.
Right. Well, that's cool that having sort of experiencing that song for the first time, it still stuck enough to kick in.
I need to ask about the poster. Amazing visual on the poster. And I'm someone who tends to, perhaps my age, and it's that terrible mix of nostalgia and wanting to tell people that life was better back then. But I love the old kind of like 80s and 70s painted posters, Drew Stoos and all those guys. But you somehow manage, even though it's a photograph poster, you manage to capture that feeling in the design. Are you hands-on with that level of the marketing?
Fairly hands-on. I've got a good... dialogue going with the marketing of the film because, you know, I mean, quite frankly, these movies that I make are all about reveal. And so there's a very important line to respect in terms of how to feed an audience's imagination as opposed to giving them the film. If you're talking about the film with the mask.
Yeah. With the hand.
Yeah, I did not design that. That was not my idea. That came from the marketing department. And it's a beautiful, beautiful image.
Really lovely. So you were behind the one with the scissors, though?
Yes. When I came and first pitched the film, I told them my vision for that scissors poster, you know, because just give them a little bit, give them enough to understand what the aesthetic of the horror
what
is.
Might lay ahead, But it's great the way they broke that into for the Fangoria cover, I thought, because they just use the top half, and then you have to put the bottom half to get the full effect.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
like a mad pull away.
Yeah, the Fangoria issue is very exciting to me.
Yeah. Because you, presumably, when you were a kid, that would have been a big thing to you, Fango.
Yeah. As you pointed out, these posters and images from horror movies, I was able to see those before I was allowed to actually see the movies, which is almost worse.
Yeah.
Because, again, what you don't know is what terrifies you.
Yeah.
The Nightmare on Elm Street poster, I remember for years, just gave me nightmares.
Yeah, and you never got, you wouldn't have been able to see that film for quite a while. Because I guess you're pre-video as well, aren't you? Or was video around, did home video when you were a kid, did you have one?
Betamax and VHS started when I was around five.
Oh, so you're lucky. Yeah, see, I exist in that golden age before that. So really, you would just see, maybe someone had an 8mm camera and you could see a 30-second of a movie like The Blob. That was all we had, Jordan.
Wow.
That was it.
When I say
I'm from the shadow, I'm from the sewers, we didn't even have...
You're from the underpass, that's what we called it.
I'm the level below that. We didn't even have rabbits. Jordan, thank you so much. I'm a huge fan. I can't wait to see Us again because I watched Get Out about 5 or 6 times. I watched it again recently. And even now I'm finding new things. I'm thinking, I didn't notice that before.
Yeah.
So I love the way you hide stuff. I love the kind of textures that you put within it. I can't wait to enjoy Us in the same way. And it's going to be huge. So continued success to you. And thank you so much for the films.
Appreciate that, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Great.
So that was the time we had to spend chatting. I could have gone on for hours. I'm sure I would have enjoyed it. I suspect he would have done so slightly less, but I'm sure we'll get to catch up again sometime. Us is out on the 22nd everywhere. Please, please, please do go and see it. It's an amazing piece of work, and it boasts a performance from Lupita Nyong'o, which is just, I think, one of the very best you will see all year. An incredible film, an incredible director. If you enjoyed the podcast, then please tell your friends and make sure that if you haven't done so already, you subscribe. Thank you.
Where's Jason?
Jason?
Jason!
Where were you?
I didn't know if you were lost. Stick with me and I'll keep you safe.
There's a family in our driveway.
It's probably the neighbors.
But y'all scared of a family?
Hi, can I help you?
Zora, put your shoes on.
If you want to get crazy, we can get crazy.
What are you people?
It's us.